When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Brainstuff, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, Brainstuff, Lauren Vogelbaum here. The word okay is probably the most spoken word in the world. Even outside of its originator, English, people say okay in some dozen languages, including Spanish, Italian, and Russian. But where did it come from? And how do you spell it? That second one is easy. Most dictionaries have accepted that people vacillate among the two-letter OK and the four-letter OKAY and say that either are, well, OK. But as to its origins, there are a lot of myths. Some say it was borrowed from a Choctaw word, OK. Others suggest it originated with a Boston baker named Otto Kimmel, who liked to frost his initials into his biscuits. Could it have had anything to do with the state of Oklahoma, abbreviated OK, or the musical Oklahoma? Nope, nope, and nope. For the article this episode is based on, How Stuff Works spoke with Anatoly Lieberman, a linguist, translator, and language professor at the University of Minnesota. He said, OK is the greatest American word. The history of OK is a history of incredible success, but nobody could have predicted that success. As you'll see, OK began as a piece of insider slang from the late 1830s and rode a losing presidential campaign to nationwide fame and eventually worldwide ubiquity. But let's start at the beginning. In the early 1800s, new printing technologies dramatically reduced the cost of publishing newspapers, and there was a resulting explosion of inexpensive new daily periodicals known collectively as the penny press. Competing for readers, penny papers in cities like New York, Philadelphia, and Boston published not only straight news stories, but also witty takes on the latest political scandals, social scenes, and popular trends. Think of it as the internet of the 1830s. And much like the internet, the lively back-and-forth chatter between penny paper editors gave birth to new ways of writing, and eventually, new ways of speaking. Famed etymologist Alan Walker Reed worked on and off for some 20 years to trace the full history of the word OK back in the middle of the 1900s. Note that this was decades before digitized newspaper archives were keyword searchable. Lieberman said, Reed must have spent hundreds of hours digging through tons and tons of physical newspapers, journals, private letters, and other documents. In a research paper published in 1963 in the journal American Speech, Reed explained that the road to OK began in the summer of 1838 in Boston. There, there developed what he called a remarkable vogue that might well be called a craze of using abbreviations. A Boston's Morning Post used in June and July of that year comically complicated acronyms for anything and everything. For example, RTBS for Remains to Be Seen, DLEC for Do Let Him Come, and GTDHD for Give the Devil His Due, the last of which editor Charles Gordon Green was obligated to explain a few days later after having received several letters from confounded readers. By 1939, the initial language, as it was sometimes called, had arrived in New York City and had already leapt from print to fashionable slang. The editors of New York's Evening Tattler wrote, "This is a species of spoken shorthand, which is getting into very general use among loafers and gentlemen of the fancy." They claimed to have overheard a conversation between two young sweethearts, where the girl turned to her beau and said, "OKKBWP," which, they speculated, could have meant nothing but one kind kiss before we part. This all reminds me of how modern text and chat abbreviations have made their way into verbal vernacular. Perhaps you've heard someone dryly end an unfunny sentence with LOL. And another thing that internet users have sometimes shared with 19th century Americans. Some thought it was really funny to purposefully misspell stuff. This reminds me of the way that we modernly might caption a photo or video of a cat or dog when it's supposed to be written in the animal's voice, or how we use misspellings to denote regional accents. Note that this kind of humor, at its worst, can be pretty meanly classist, punching down at those of us humans who have had less access to education. Try not to do that. But at any rate, by the late 1830s, the misspelling trend had combined with the acronym trend to produce punchy abbreviations like KY for no use, as if it were spelled KNOWYUSE, or OW for all right, as if it were spelled OLLWRIGHT. Absolutely no one says KY or OW anymore, but believe it or not, that wordplay laid the groundwork for the arrival of the two-letter abbreviation that would conquer the world. In the spring of 1839, Charles Gordon Green, the editor of Boston's Morning Post, was engaged in some good-natured trash talk with the editors of the Providence Journal in Rhode Island. It had to do with a semi-satirical citizens group in Boston called the Anti-Bell Ringing Society, or ABRS, of which Green was a member. The Providence paper poked fun at Green and the ABRS, and Green had to set the record straight. So it was that on March 21st of 1839, at the end of a short paragraph defending the ABRS, Green coined the acronym OK, meaning all correct. Similar to using OW for all right, Green had coined this new misspelled acronym, OK for OLLKORRECT. 3 days after Green introduced OK to the world, the Providence Journal editors responded with an OK of their own. Like other offbeat acronyms of the day, OK was an inside joke randomly thrust into general circulation. But unlike OW, which enjoyed brief popularity in the 1830s, OK didn't die out. And that's thanks to Martin Van Buren. The 8th president of the United States hailed from the small town of Kinderhook, New York. Similar to his mentor and fellow Democrat Andrew Jackson, who was known as Old Hickory, Van Buren's nickname was Old Kinderhook. In the 1840 presidential election, William Henry Harrison and the Whig Party challenged the incumbent Van Buren. Harrison's supporters came up with the catchy, for its time, campaign slogan and song, "Tippecanoe and Tyler Too." The Democrats swung back with a slogan of their own, "OK is OK," as in, Old Kinderhook is all correct. Clubs sprung up in early 1840 that spread the slogan, making the word OK part of mainstream political conversation. Van Buren lost, badly, but OK definitely won. After 1840, the word spread like wildfire and never looked back. Originally, OK appeared in documents and telegraph messages, which may account for its international spread, but not in everyday speech, as it was slangy. But that changed over time. Back in 2012, linguist Alan Metcalf published a book called OK, The Improbable Story of America's Greatest Word. In an article for BBC Magazine the previous year, he speculated as to why OK became popular all over the world. He wrote, "It's not that it was needed to fill a gap in any language. Before 1839, English speakers had yes, good, fine, excellent, satisfactory, and all right. What OK provided that the others did not was neutrality, a way to affirm or to express agreement without having to offer an opinion. OK allows us to view a situation in simplest terms, just OK or not, which sounds pretty OK to us." Today's episode is based on the article Made in America, The Ridiculous History of OK on HowStuffWorks.com, written by Dave Ruse. BrainStuff is a production of iHeartRadio in partnership with HowStuffWorks.com and is produced by Tyler Klang. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.